Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Thank you for tuning in today to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Today we have a really interesting show. We've all wondered at some time if UFOs really exist or visit our planet. Are the people who claim to see them lying about it or maybe not seeing what they think they saw? What about alien abductions? Is that just the stuff science fiction books and movies are made of? 76 years ago, Orson Welles created a nationwide panic when he broadcasted the War of the Worlds story he had written about, which was fiction, on alien invasion. It was on CBS radio, and the entire nation thought there was a Martian invasion. So it created panic. So if UFOs really do exist, is it something to fear? Well, my next guest is going to talk to us about that because he's got firsthand knowledge. My guest is Chad Meek. He is a writer, director, executive producer who has taken his early childhood UFO abduction experiences and time that he spent with his eclectic uncle, George Van Tassel, back in the early 1900s. All the way up to 1978, to tell an epic story about the early space contactees movement that occurred at a place called Giant Rock. The epic story, based on true events, is being referred to by many in the film industry as the most definitive and possible the greatest UFO story never told. Mr. Meek is president and CEO of Clarity Resources. It is a wholly owned subsidiary that brings over 30 years of solid experience in the oil and gas, mineral, and investment banking industries to Giant Rock Universal and the Giant Rock, the movie franchise. He is also an intuitive and an astrologer who has had an ongoing practice in one way or another for over 25 years. Well, that's a lot about him, but I'm going to let him tell you about him yourself, himself. Hi, Chad, are you there?
Okay. I am. Can you hear me?
I can. Awesome. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. You know what? I tell you, you did such a great job. I don't think I can add anything. I think you did such a fantastic job in the intro. I'm very, very good. I think, my gosh, this sounds great. I may record this and use this again. So yeah, anyways, great. Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad to be here, Randy. It's my pleasure to be on your show this morning. I think it's afternoon on your side of the coast. So at any rate, yeah, I'm glad to be here. So yeah, good. Go ahead.
Well, we're really glad to have you. So you have such an exciting story, and you have a lot to talk about what you do now as a result of the experiences that you had back then. So can you tell us a little bit about your experiences when you were a child and this whole giant rock thing?
Absolutely. I absolutely love sharing the story. In fact, please. And I have a habit of basically overwhelming my hosts with this story because they have so much passion for it. I literally sit there and just chat over the host, and I don't want to do that, so please just break in and say, hey, stop and get a question in, because once I get going, it's such an intimate story with me. I mean, my subconscious just keeps going on and on and on and on about this stuff. So, but let me start just briefly. Let's just go back 3 years from now as far as how I actually decided to write a screenplay about this. And really, how that occurred was I have a ranch down in Baja, California, and my next-door neighbor at the time, he was an actor, character actor, not really well known, but had worked with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino in the movie Heat and some other production, and I was just chatting with him about this, and I had never had any intention of ever really writing a screenplay. I mean, of course, it was or making a movie, or even writing a book about this is always kind of on the to-do list, somewhere down the road. In fact, originally I thought, well, I'll just come down here, I'll ride my horses, and maybe drink a few margaritas. that was the original concept. But, it's so funny. The universe has different plans for us at different times. And what we think we're going to do, we have our plans, and the Creator has His. And so,
totally.
At any rate, that's kind of what I went with it. Anyways, I told him the story. I told him essentially a brief overview, and he was completely enthralled with the whole storyline and the subject matter because he liked the various shows on TV, History Channel, and there's been a lot of information out there. And so he literally almost strangled me and says, "Hey, dude, you need to write a screenplay about this." And I go, "I've never written a screenplay in my life." Yeah, I go, he goes, "Well," so at any rate, what I did was I said, okay, I kind of had that Forrest Gump moment, we'll just see how that goes. And I began the story. And my first tact was this. We all go for self-protection. We don't like to reveal everything about ourselves, even our experiences. Sometimes, it makes you you're guarded. And so my idea was I'll write this great story and I will make it about some of the first principles, Frank Kreitzer and my Uncle George Van Taft. I'll give a good overview about it. And literally, I almost had this cosmic event. And as I was writing, I said, there's something missing here. And it was almost an aha or a self-discovery metaphysical moment that I had. I said, hey, wait a minute. This story isn't complete unless I'm in it because I had my own experiences. And it was kind of a heavy epiphany, and I never had any intention of basically giving my part of the story. And as it turned out, it was a little bit dry and a little bit more, at best a docudrama. And I thought, okay, and so I started introducing a character named Chase, which, it's a play on words, Chad Chase. In fact, my Great Dane, I named him Chase. I entered the story from a small child's eyes, and as far as, through those eyes, and the continuity that occurred, and the blossoming of the story, it just came alive.
When you talk about doing it through a child's eyes, you're talking about your real experiences, right, Chad?
What really happened. Essentially, the movie is based on true events that occurred to Frank Kreitzer and my uncle and the whole giant rock phenomenon, but it needed to be told through my eyes. And so that's kind of where I got. And then once that was decided, for some reason, I call it God, the creator, the first cause, whatever. I mean, something took me over. And literally that, the story just blossomed, came alive. And it had such components that I literally got lost for 2 years writing the story. I literally got lost. I mean, I'd spend 15, 20 hours a day and I'd just be going at it, and I'm thinking, wow, where'd the time go? So I got the budding artist or creative thing that occurred to me, and so that's what I did. So anyways, from there, I just kind of backtracked. And some of the experiences that I had, which included an abduction that I remember vividly, some of this, I could literally see it. It all came back. And so in many respects, the reason, I mean, even though I believe it's going to be huge, it's going to be big, people will love it, it's really for me. It's almost a cathartic experience to basically get this stuff out that I've been very guarded about sharing. Now, I shared the story with, my sisters and brothers growing up. They had their own, a couple of, experiences themselves. But I didn't really share it with anybody because I was, I don't know, it was so different. And I was kind of living in the, Leave It to Beaver or Donna Reed black and white, world where everything came in very tight, convenient packages. So that's why I was reluctant. Plus, I was in the business world. I mean, and I would think, well, what would people think of me if I told them that I was abducted by aliens? I mean,
Right. That's got to blow people. They think you are a real wacko.
Right. And the mental illness thing comes up all the time. I mean, it's like, well, were you looking for attention? Were you mad at your parents or whatever? Is there a time period? And the answer is no. In fact, I didn't tell my parents. In fact, I wouldn't tell my uncle. My uncle knew exactly what had happened to me. He was extraordinary. He was this psychic force du jour. I mean, he actually channeled alien entities, and they gave him tremendous information about science, technology, and the future. And so when you use kind of this Orson Welles or War of the Worlds type thing, I mean, any of the great the scientific writers, I mean, he literally had that. I mean, he had that vision, et cetera, et cetera. And he would drill me because he knew. And it would drive me crazy, but I'd say no, no, no. But let me go back to the original abduction thing, which happened at about 4 years old. And really, it's not a huge, it's a huge story, but the details are very, very simple. I was awoken out of my sleep, and I was in a room with two of my brothers, and I was teleported through a glass window into a waiting ship that was outside of our home, and I was brought into a table, and it was a very sterile environment. It's a classical gray abduction, which maybe we'll get later into some of the statistics about it, but I was paralyzed. I couldn't yell. I couldn't scream. I was in terror. It was a pure terror. Telepathically, they told me that it wouldn't hurt, and that I wouldn't remember this, and that everything would be okay. And that was what they were telling me. I was down on this thing. They were looking at me. They were probing me with instruments. And from that point, I just remember waking up with a very high temperature, and I stuttered profusely. And it went on for a long time. There's something really strange that happened to me as far as that. So we went to the doctor. They didn't see anything was wrong with me. I had some rashes as far as the physical. I had rashes under my armpits and underneath my groin, which it's funny. The post-traumatic syndrome of that actually carried on. There's another part of this thing, too, which is almost as bizarre as far as what happened with that. But that's where it started. And then I started having missing time periods. Now, I don't really have any memory of the missing time periods, which were 6 to 8 hours. I was always dismayed at how people didn't miss me, and I couldn't figure out how my family would go, and I wouldn't be missed. And I find out later this is really quite common. So that went on until I was about 8 years old. And again, I was in fear of telling anybody about this event because it just was so out of the norm for me. So essentially that's what happened. I guess that was my induction into this whole thing. Now, from that point, I would listen to my uncle and the stories from my cousins and things like that, but I would never reveal anything about, because I was really in fear of making it worse. I was fear if I would acknowledge this stuff that occurred to me, that would happen even more. And I conveniently had put this in a different space into my brain that I didn't want to bring it up. In fact, even later, my uncle was he was a prolific speaker. I mean, he did over 200 television shows. I mean, he was a weekly guest on the Lon John Neville show out of New York, which Larry King took over. And, guests, he would banter with people like Jackie Gleason and what have you on a weekly basis. So he was very, very, respected as far as this. But some of the old shows would come up on TV, and I'd be sitting even years later with my friends, and they'd say, oh, wow, how cool is that, and all that stuff. And I would sit there, and I'd say nothing at all. I'd sit there and say, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Did you remember? Did you have memories?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But you just didn't want to share them.
I just didn't want to share them because I didn't think that was the cool or the thing to do. And because you would portray yourself as the whole victim thing, I, per se, there are no accidents in life, and, as far as that, but I didn't want to portray that part of me that would have something like that happen. Now, that was my own pretzel logic, okay, as far as that stuff goes. But then again, it probably was the safe and probably the smart thing to do because, young kids, they can be very, very cruel.
Oh, I can't even imagine what would have happened to you.
Right. I had enough problems,
My question is, Chad, you talk a lot about your uncle, and Giant Rock is in the Mojave Desert, right, which is in California. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so you talk a lot about your uncle, and apparently you spent a lot of time with him. Where were your parents when all this was going on?
Well, unfortunately, and that's the reason I was out there, is my parents, they had a lot of, personal issues. They had, my mother had a religious and an alcohol problem all combined in one, and my father, they just weren't there. They were having their own problems. So what would occur is that when my parents at that time, and they're both deceased, but at that time, they had really a hard time living and paying bills and things like that, and so we would be in distress, and so we would end up going out and living with my grandmother, which we reverently called her then, and even now is Fat Grandma, and actually she's a character. We call her Fat Grandma because we had a Fat Grandma, or one with a little pouch, which is my grandmother. We lived out there, and then we had a very skinny grandma. So how we differentiate the two was skinny grandma.
Okay.
Was a skinny
grandma.
Okay. So yeah. So we would. She was a saint, and she would take us in. So we would have. So what would happen is that we would move out. The family would move out with the grandmother, and we would be with my uncle, my Aunt Eva, and my cousins and my other relatives out there. And during the time period.
All in the same house, Chad? All in the same house?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my grandmother, her house was separate. And then my uncle's house was approximately about a half a mile away. And my other uncle's house was about a quarter of a mile away. So it's kind of like a complex as far as that kind of stuff. They all homesteaded their own acreage out there. So that was the setting of that. And so what we would do, the only thing that was available out there within probably about a 10 to 15-mile radius was my uncle's restaurant, which was out at Giant Rock, which was a and they had a dry lake and a big airport. So the only the center of everything was Giant Rock, which was an 8-foot-story carved out boulder, okay, that you that actually had a piano in. It was huge. So we would go in there, that was, and we'd go to the restaurant and play with our friends. It was kind of a really contained environment, and that was what we had to do, other than basically run around the desert and explore all the very mystical energy that was out there at the time. So
that, did you feel that? Did you know that the energy was mystical when you were a child?
Yes, it still is. At that time, at that time, the feeling out there was extraordinary. There were things that occurred to me. There were several events. There were voices coming out of the sky, and of course, I know where all this, what some people might think. But, I guess I have good company, because I think Moses had the same experience, even though I'm not Moses.
Back in the biblical times, they were a lot more connected to people of the other world. There's a lot of information
right
about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back, and in fact, my avocation is comparative religion also. One of the many things. And you can imagine, with all these events, my thirst for knowledge as far as all of this stuff, and metaphysics, comparative religion, things like that, trying to figure out what this is about, our existence, I would have this thirst. And even, even as an adult, my whole life has been either in libraries and bookstores. All I've ever done was research in my free time about all these different subjects, because I had to know. There are people who, it's interesting, and yet they may do this and this, but my avocation has always been research in metaphysics, ufology, all these various subjects in religions, basically to get the information that I required to basically feel okay. So, in answer to your question, it was a very mystical time period. My uncle was very, very powerful, and he channeled a lot of. The term channeling was given to him by a reporter from Life magazine that incidentally he made the cover of. And they asked him, how do you do this, and how can anybody do this? He says, and my uncle says, it's almost like a TV, and sometimes I turn the channel, and I'll talk to several different entities. So the term channeling came from him.
He coined the phrase. Interesting. Had he had before Giant Rock, had he had any metaphysical experiences?
Myself?
No, your uncle.
He had several. A lot of them, he was a flight engineer. In fact, he was number two for Howard Hughes, for Hughes Aircraft. He was a flight instructor, flight engineer. He was a very, very gifted, not only gifted, he was a genius, a brilliant man, but he was gifted with his hands. He got his pilot's license in Ohio. He was the youngest person to ever get his pilot's license at 16. So he was in aviation, and apparently he had, from what he had told me, that he had several experiences flying over the Los Angeles area, running into and seeing UFOs and things like that. And incidentally, one of them was when he was in the plane with Howard Hughes. They both had saw this. And so they actually formed a relationship ongoing. And Howard Hughes used to fly out to Giant Rock and land his planes on the dry lake, which is a natural landing strip out there, and in fact backed him in some of his experiments in healing and rejuvenation and things like that with a thing called Integraton, which actually is still out there. So, you can imagine. I'm listening to myself almost in the third person, thinking, listening to me talk right now, and I'm thinking, this is the stuff you make a this is stuff you make a movie about.
Exactly, exactly.
So.
Yeah. So, you know, your uncle was this well-known man, but he was also very vocal about being a ufologist, and people respected that about him?
Well, you know what? He was almost evangelical, which, you know, I try to make sure that everyone knows I'm not. You know, I'm not evangelical about this. I mean, it's you know, but he was. And, yeah, and he was – at times people would try to ridicule him, and but he had such a direct link in content that I think that he had no choice about, going and speaking his truth as far as what was going on. And also, too, I believe at the time period after a lot of the above-ground nuclear explosions that were going on in the 40s and the 50s, there was a real pressing need for someone to tell tell the powers that be that this is a tremendous mistake. That in fact, he got one channeling, one event that occurred, and that's actually got him the cover of Life magazine, and also got him listed as the most dangerous persons list in the United States. Was he had an event where the space people, as they referred to, told him to send telegrams out to contact everyone to tell them to stop above ground nuclear testing. And of course, this is, during the Cold War time period. There was a lot of a lot of conflict going on with all of this. And what he did was they told him, they said, listen, and I guess he was arguing with them back and forth, saying, no, I don't want to do this. He said, they're going to ruin me. I said, they're going to ruin me and my family, And so he literally had this two-way conversation. They said, no, do it. He says, we're going to send a flotilla of spaceships over Washington, D.C. And this is one of the most incredible parts of this, these true events, because in July of 1952, my uncle sent telegrams out to all the military people and to all kinds of different publications, stating that there was going to be a huge flyover Washington, D.C. in support of what he was saying about above-ground nuclear testing, that it needed to stop.
You're talking about an alien flyover?
Yeah, an alien flyover. And they talk about this. In fact, you can go on the web. UFOs over Washington, D.C., and it's probably one of the more well-documented and more seen by amount of people of any of them. And so it actually happened. It happened between July 12th and July 19th. It actually occurred out there. So consequently, well, you got two things out of it. He became very famous. It was kind of he became very suspect. But during that time period also, he was in contact with the Eisenhower administration, and they felt that he was too dangerous and that people would – they had a real conflict with anybody talking to aliens directly. And there's a whole channel of information as far as where we actually made deals with aliens for technology and things like that. It makes tremendous sense to me now. But that's what actually occurred. And really, they told him it's not just about here, but it's about parallel universes, that they're creating tears in this whole set of places affecting not only our civilization, but civilizations that we weren't even aware of. Now, the reason why this is so sci-fi and sounds so incredible, but it's not, because now scientists, with quantum physics and quantum mechanics, they have absolutely proved the existence of parallel universe vis-a-vis mathematics. So that it makes sense. We don't have any empty spaces here. We're just not aware of all the various things that are going on simultaneously. I mean,
right.
As we see twinkle, twinkle, little star, we're seeing stars, but in between that, there's this vast amount of open space that we consider open, but it really is a perceptual thing. There's all kinds of things going on, that's out there. So anyways, so what he did was, and they created a group called, the government created a group called COINTEL, which was specifically designed, and he had good company. Later on, Dr. Martin Luther King was on it, and several people were a part of this working group, which was meant to discredit anybody that didn't toe the line of the United States government, and that they thought was that we were threatening the good conduct and peace of the civilization. So they actually thought of him as a threat, which really he wasn't. I mean, all he was mm-hmm. doing what he was told. And,
right.
You know, so that, yeah. So
let me ask you a question. Yeah. Can I ask you a question, Chad?
Sure.
Can I ask you a question? So, you know, we look up in the sky and we go, oh, you know, do they live on Mars? Do they live on, you know, Jupiter, whatever? But what we're not talking about life on the planets that we know of. We're talking about life in, is it different dimensions or is it further out in the universe? What are we talking about?
It's both. Actually, you know, and it's funny, we get into kind of a discussion about, you know, angels and aliens, you know, what are they, you know, and
right.
they're actually interchangeable. I mean, you know, as far as that stuff, because there are angels, you know, within our dimensions that are actually set up to, you know, actually help us, you know, nurture us as we go along. And, you know, there are various,
right.
you know, new rulers of principles and things like that. That's just how the universe works. But then there are truly, there are other life forms on other planets. We know now that that Mars has, of course, has water. And any place you have water, you have life. And so, you know, all kinds of things could develop. And it's apparent that there actually at one time where there was life on Mars. So that was one of the closest planets. But there are other outside of our galaxies that we're just finding out, like, you know, Sirius. We're you know, there's several tribes out of Africa that would talk to this, you know, that we're talking about this whole world that live outside of our known universe out there, and it's in their folklore as far as visitors. And so that's what we're talking. We're literally talking about within our own planetary system and outside of our known, and also this interdimensional thing that, you know, that scientists now are discovering. I mean, everything is so connected and truly, you know, one, and that's what keeps coming, that's the main theme that keeps going on, but now scientists are proving it through mathematics. So
let me ask you another question.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Let me ask you another question. You told me to not to let you run on, so
I'm
interrupting.
No, absolutely. No, do that, please.
Okay. Do aliens walk among us?
Yes, they
are
do.
They do. Disguised as human beings?
Yes, they are. There are crossbreeds of humanoids that actually have that. It's been going on for, in fact, okay, if you want to go, I guess you want to go back to the Adam's rib thing. I mean, that's DNA splicing, you know, as far as when they're trying, you know, the whole Old Testament, all that stuff, you know, first of all, they weren't big on words back then. They were trying to describe some very scientific things that they were getting conceptually, but Adam's rib's a prime example of DNA splicing. You know, they made a woman out of Adam's rib. They made a person out of a rib, which is DNA splicing. That's just code. So yeah, they are there, and there are people. There are mixed breeds of threads and strands of people, and it's been going on for, you know, since time, the end.
Do
so,
they
yeah,
interact
they,
with
they
us?
Are.
Do they interact with us the way a human would interact with us?
Sure, and there's actually many that don't even understand that they are, that they're actually,
okay.
you know, that they're down there. I mean, they, you know, so, yeah, and they do interact. And there's some that are actually more evolved, that are trying to help, and there's so many stories, and especially because I do some, I do regression therapy, and some of the stories I've heard just outside of this, where actually there are, you know, they actually appear as angels. I mean, they actually, you know, act like angels, but they're just in human form. Yeah.
So are they something to be feared? Should we fear these aliens?
I don't think so. You know, the whole, you know, Stephen Hawking thing, where he came out, he says, well, we don't, you know, it'll be like the Indians with an advanced civilization. Come on. if you can basically fly a ship without any noise and, you know, come here and interact with this, they've had the technology a long time ago to actually annihilate or that. That's just not the agenda.
What is the agenda? Why are they coming?
Protection. This is my idea or my thesis, is I think they're down to help us not destroy each other, because that has actually occurred here several times, where things became so out of control. And it depends on if you can go into various different time periods like Lemuria or Atlantis and things like that, where really the people became so wicked and so destructive with technology that literally they almost had to be wiped off the face of the Mother Earth for fear of destroying each other, which we actually have, in 63, we came to the brink of literally destroying the whole entire planet. I mean, we were within hours of that. So it's not too far off. So they actually, and again, because we see such a preponderance of activity after nuclear explosions, that's what occurs. So we think that they're here watching, monitoring, and making sure that we don't.
Okay.
I
want to let you know we're coming down to the wire here. When I talked to you, did you say that you had gained psychic powers from the abduction, or that you had them to begin with? And tell us a little bit about what you do with those powers.
I just got bits and pieces. I'm standing outside of my veterinarian, so I apologize.
Okay, let me say it again. Let me say it again, because we're really getting close to running out of time. Okay, you're an intuitive and an astrologer. And you say you've had ongoing practice one way or another for 25 years. Was this intuitive ability something you had prior to the abductions, or something you got as a result of the abductions?
I believe they were as a result of them. I believe that they're a result of them. I mean, people call me, and I've done recoveries as far as missing people and dead bodies and things like that. About a year and a half ago, a gentleman, an American down in Mexico, came up missing, and I was able to locate him, locate where he had died, and they recovered his. And I've had some really, clairvoyant, quadrivoyant, you name it. I've had voices come and tell me exactly various things, and especially when I'm really getting intimate in somebody's chart, I literally get, such a great composite view of that person. It's almost organic. I mean, it's literally like looking in a microscope. So I've benefited from it. And so I embrace the experience now. At the time, it was uncomfortable. I wouldn't recommend it.
Before we run out of time, can you tell everybody how they can get in touch with you if they want to avail themselves of your services, or where they'll be able to find the movie and when?
Okay. Well, we're still, we're very busy with the movie. Let's start with the movie. It's www.giantrockthemovie.com. So you can go to my website, and, of course, I'm on Twitter, Chad C. Meek. And also my email is chad@giantrockthemovie.com. So you can contact me that way. That's my direct email, so you'll get to me there. The movie right now, we're still in the pre-production end. We anticipate being able to film in September. We've got a big chunk of our money. We're still looking for additional. Our budget's quite huge. It's $30 million. This is not independent. This is going to be a full feature film and should be distributed and viewed widely worldwide. My best guess, and I'm fairly close, is I think it'll come out in September of 2015. So people will be able to see that. Yeah, and I hope everyone does. And please go see this movie because it's really going to
love
it.
Oh, we will. Well, when it comes out, when it comes out, we'll have you back on, and then you can say, you know, the movie's been released, and we can talk about that. Okay, well, unfortunately, our time is up for today. I've pushed it from 30 minutes to 45. But I want to thank you so much, Chad, for coming on and telling us your story. And it is fascinating. I can't imagine having the experience myself, but it is very fascinating to hear about. So thank you.
Oh, hey, listen, it's been my pleasure. Listen, it's been a great time, and I love your show, and this has been really great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Chad. Have a really good day.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So our time is up for today, but if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. Stop by my website, randygfine.com, and sign the guest book. I welcome feedback about my shows, so you can leave comments for me there as well. Please stop by to visit me on my Facebook page, Randy G. Fine, and like me. My page is filled with inspirational picture quotes that you can enjoy and share. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. There's actually a way on my show page that you can actually become a follower. More followers will get this show the recognition that it deserves. Visit my blog or website at randygfine.com. Randy is always spelled R-A-N-D-I, randygfine.com, for even more inspiration, and join the list of devoted followers there. And when you become one of my followers, you'll get updates on things that are going on. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. RANDIGFINE.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. Be the change. There's a better way.